I'm Robert Siegel, and this is The Connection. The seesaw of power has officially shifted in the 107th Congress this morning. James Jeffords' decision to leave the Republican Party handed the Democrats control of the Senate with a precarious 50-49 majority. Role changes are what's in order, with some senators stepping down from their posts, others stepping in, and various, sometimes conflicting calls for what to do next. Tom Daschle, who is the new majority leader, says he hopes for a smooth transition of power. Trent Lott, relinquishing the same position, issued a political call to arms. Where might it all lead? Connection listeners, today we'll be taking your calls about the consequence of just one senator's vote. And we want to know, what's the deeper meaning of the Jeffords conversion? Does it force the Republican Party to close ranks or to broaden the tent? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-TALK to make the Senate switch connection. Joining me today is Mara Lias, an NPR's national political correspondent and also parliamentarian emeritus of the United States Senate, Robert Dove. Thank you both for being here at the beginning of the program. And Mara, first to you, what would you say is the significance of this change we're witnessing today?
Well, the significance is huge. It's kind of like a political meteorite landed in Washington because never before in history has a party switch effected a switch of control of the Senate. Now, having said that, nobody's votes have changed. It's still going to be just as tough to put together a majority. And from now on, after the budget is over, it's really a majority of 60. Only budget bills needed 51 votes. And it's going to be just as tough for the president to get his proposals through. I think what it does do is it gives Democrats control of the schedule. They are committee chairman now, and they have more tools at their disposal to block the president's agenda. I don't think that they have a whole lot more ability to get their own agenda through. But it is a big sea change, and it was a big warning sign to the president, and it underscored what Jim Jeffords said when he switched, which is that the president needs to govern more from the center, or at least be perceived that way.
So it's back to divided government, in short, a situation that has not been unusual in recent decades in Washington.
No, voters seem to prefer that. For most of the last 50 years, that's what they've chosen.
Well, the complicated process of shifting power in a Senate this closely divided has caused some to wonder if the Republicans might try to block the majority leader, might try to block the change even at one point with the filibuster. Senator Tom Daschle, who's the new majority leader, said that he expected a smooth transition in the Senate committees.
I think one would have to admit that the votes just wouldn't be there to revisit this tax bill. It passed by a fairly significant margin, so I think it would be fruitless to do that.
That actually was Senator Daschle talking about the tax bill. He was not saying that, but he did say that the Democrats are in no immediate hurry to rush things. They can wait a while to reach an agreement with the Republicans. Here's actually what he said.
I think that it was very unfortunate that a number of Democrats came right out last week and basically said, well, this is the end of national missile defense.
No, that wasn't Senator Tom Daschle either. That was Trent Lott, the outgoing Senate Majority Leader. Joining us, though, also from Washington is Robert Dove, who was the parliamentarian of the U.S. Senate and is a professor of law at Georgetown University. Robert Dove, we're hearing things about what happens in committee, what happens on the floor, who controls the agenda.
Assume that one of the reasons you called me is that I've been watching the Senate since 1966, mm-hmm. when I went in the parliamentarian's office, and studying what the Senate has been like since 1884, which is the last time we changed our rules in any significant way. We actually have been here before. In the Congress that sat from January of 1953 to 1955, ironically, at about this point in that Congress, about 6 months into it, Robert Taft, the majority leader, died. That left a Senate with 47 Republicans, 48 Democrats, and one independent, Wayne Morse. Now, the difference is that Wayne Morse, who, like Jim Jeffords, was elected as a Republican but then changed to independent, did not say that he would vote with the Democrats to organize the Senate. And so the Senate remained Republican because the vice president at that time, Richard Nixon, was Republican. But it was a situation in which it was very difficult to govern. The majority leader, William Noland, made a speech on the floor that how terrible it was to be a majority leader with, in effect, a minority. And Lyndon Johnson immediately got up. He was the minority leader at the time, mm-hmm. and said it's much worse to be the minority leader with a majority. So they both have their problems. The Senate is not like the House, and a bare majority in the House can do anything it wishes. A bare majority in the Senate cannot.
Yes, explain that a bit. The rights of the minority in the U.S. Senate are really quite ample.
Well, I compare often the Senate to, like, the nuclear club, in that every member of the Senate knows that at any point, if he wishes, he can blow the place up. Now, the reason they don't is because of the fallout. Senators would not be happy with any individual senator who used all of those powers a lot. But it's very tempting, if you feel like your back is to the wall, to use them from time to time. I have seen the Senate in total chaos when various senators decided to use every power that they had. I will say the last time I saw that was 1977 when we were passing the Natural Gas Act. And only two senators, Senator Howard Metzenbaum of Ohio and Senator Aberesk of South Dakota, really were fighting that bill with all the power they had. But they had enough power to make the Senate's life miserable for about 2 weeks before we finally got that bill passed.
Well, you have worked in the Senate from back in the days when at least legend has it that a leader like Lyndon Johnson, say, really could control Senate votes and could keep a party in line. That doesn't describe the Senate nowadays, does it?
Well, there's no question that Lyndon Johnson created the modern majority leadership and is a fabled leader because of his ability to wield coalitions of disparate people. To me, that is still the same. If you can work a coalition of fairly disparate people, you can be a very powerful leader. I think Senator Robert Byrd in the period of the late 70s showed the enormous power of that post. For example, one of his major achievements was the Panama Canal Treaties, and he formed a coalition that included then-minority leader Howard Baker.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to reach across the aisle to actually run the United States Senate. You cannot do it from only one side.
We're talking with Robert Dove, who until recently was the parliamentarian of the U.S. Senate, and we're also going to be hearing from a couple of U.S. senators in this hour, starting now with Senator Charles Grassley, Republican of Iowa, who was, for this Congress, until yesterday, I guess, until last night, chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. And today, Senator, ranking minority member?
Yes, and kind of anticipating since the first of the year that this could happen, but under different circumstances than Senator Jeffords becoming an independent, but having a great pleasure of being chairman of the committee for 136 days and getting through the third largest tax reduction in the last 50 years, and also demonstrating bipartisanship by working with then-ranking member Senator Baucus to put the tax bill together, and hope that the model that we set for the tax bill is the kind of bipartisanship that will prevail in a legislative body like the U.S. Senate now that's so evenly and closely divided.
You said that you had anticipated this might happen at the beginning of the session, but not this way. By that you mean that there are some elderly senators on the Republican side of the aisle. There have been some people in ill health. The balance might have shifted by virtue of a death in the Senate, perhaps.
The answer is yes.
What's the difference? I mean, does the fact that the balance has shifted because a senator has gotten up and said, I no longer want to be part of this party, I want to move independent and vote with the other party, is it any difference at all to how senators regard the change?
Well, I think the only resentment that there is towards Senator Jeffords, and I don't share this resentment, but a lot of people do, and it was referred to here by Senator Morris of Oregon already, that he was elected as a Republican, and even though he became an independent, he felt he owed it to the people of Oregon that he ought to stay as a Republican through his term of office. And the fact that Senator Jeffords and a lot of our colleagues went to Vermont to help him get elected as a Republican, and that he is no longer voting with the Republicans for organization, that's the only resentment I've heard. Because Senator Jeffords is a senator of great conviction, and he's a friend of mine. We came to the Senate in the Watergate year, to the House in the Watergate years. So, you know, I came in with a broken leg. He came in with a broken neck, and Democrats were looking.
It was a bruising campaign year in 1974.
Well, they were looking at us and said, we almost got those two. And they were going to get us at the next election, but they didn't get us. We're still here. We're three of those original 16 Republicans of the Watergate years when there were 90 new members, and most all of them were Democrats. Well, but the point, that's the sort of a friendship that Jim and I have, so I don't resent what he's doing. He's a man of conviction.
You and now the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, Senator Baucus of Montana, he was until recently the minority, the ranking minority member, you hammered out a tax bill. Is it really the case that since the most important item on the president's agenda has been acted on already, nothing else of similar size might be considered, that in fact the Senate's job is done? I mean, you can now sit back and be deadlocked for the next couple of years.
No, absolutely not. Okay. First of all, the people of this country rightly resent the sort of gridlock that you talk about and could happen and better not happen. But I think the most important thing here is that the president is a person who's committed to performing in office what he ran on in the campaign, and his tax legislation, prescription drugs, trade legislation, Social Security, energy, etc., are still going to be the major items that the United States Senate is going to be dealing with. And so it's going to be dealt with in probably a little different way and not as easy for the president with a Democrat majority. But remember, the president, as closely as the presidential election was, is still setting the agenda for this Congress.
Stay with us, Senator Grassley. I want to return to Mara Liasson of NPR in Washington first, though. Mara, try to reconcile for us these two seemingly conflicting things. Number one, Senator Grassley says Americans are frustrated by gridlock in Washington. Second, Americans seem to keep on returning divided government to Washington.
Well, that's kind of the eternal mystery of politics. I mean, I think voters like it when there's no partisan bickering. They don't like gridlock, and they like both sides to work together. On the other hand, they seem to keep on voting for a prescription for gridlock. However, maybe they're not. Maybe by sending an extremely closely divided Congress, which they did to the 2000 elections, and they certainly haven't, that hasn't changed with the Jefford switch. Maybe they're setting up a situation where both sides have to work together if anything is to get done. I don't think the difference with what happened last week or 2 weeks ago is that it's not like the voters delivered a verdict on President Bush and said, you're not governing in a bipartisan enough manner. That's not what happened. I think we'll see if they ratify the switch in the 2002 elections and they maintain Democrats in control and therefore maintain divided government. But voters, I think, are of two minds. You know, they want progress, and certainly the easiest, most guaranteed way to get progress is to have undivided government, have one party control of everything so that that program gets through. Well, maybe they agree with the founders. The founders set up a system that has a lot of checks and balances and obstacles, and they made it very hard for either side, either a majority in Congress or the president, to do too much.
And one of the realities of politics today in America is that a great many Americans don't say Senator Jeffords left us to go with them or left them to come with us. A lot of them say he left them to go with them. They don't identify with either party.
No, they don't identify with either party, but they do more and more, the polls show, identify as independents and moderates, and certainly in his home state of Vermont, which is liberal-leaning but also very independent, Jeffords got a round of applause for what he did.
We're talking about the Senate on The Connection from NPR. I'm Robert Siegel, and this is The Connection from NPR. We're talking about the switch in the Senate. The Democrats are now in the majority. We heard a moment ago from Republican Senator Charles Grassley of Iowa, who's still with us on the line. And we're joined by Senator Harry Reid, Democrat of Nevada, who is now actually now the number two man in the Senate majority. Senator Reid, is it a huge difference being the number two or whip in the majority as opposed to being whip in the minority?
Well, the main difference is that instead of now waiting every day to see what Senator Lott is going to bring up, we will be determining what will be brought up on the Senate floor. And that will make my life much more determined. I will have an idea of what we're going to do on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. But today, in days past, I haven't been able to do that. I've just kind of waited to see what they're going to try to do today.
Yeah, actually, the A former Israeli foreign minister, Abi Iban, once told me the difference between being in a parliamentary system, in government or in opposition, was, he said, in government you wake up every day and say, what'll I do today? And in opposition you wake up every day and say, what'll I say today? Was his distinction.
Well, I would just say it a little differently. What are they going to do to me today?
You have such a slim majority in the Senate by one vote. Do you now have to establish rules for dealing with the minority, knowing that by some act of God, it's quite possible you're back in the minority in another month?
Well, but you see, those rules have been established over the two centuries the Senate has been in existence. The rules are already there. We don't need to change anything. We've had a lot of narrow majorities in the past. This is no different than occurrences over the past 200 years.
But you have some tough questions ahead of you. For example, the Republicans want some statement of goodwill about President Bush's judicial nominees, that they'll get a fair hearing, that they'll get a vote on the floor.
Well, I would say, Robert, here that it appears to me they must have a guilty conscience, because they certainly don't want us to treat them like they've treated us as to judicial nominees, and we're not going to. We are going to make sure that we don't have judges that wait 4 years. Can you imagine that? Somebody waiting for 4 years, their life in turmoil, to even have a hearing. And some of them never even got a hearing.
These were President Clinton's nominees.
Right. And so what we're going to do is make sure that people have a prompt hearing. And we're going to make sure if there's – and I don't think if there's a tie vote or a tie vote, for example, in the committee, I don't think that should hold a judge off – the calendar in the Senate. I believe that if you don't like a judge, bring him forward and let's cast the votes. If he can't get the votes, then fine. And I think our record is pretty good. During the time that George W. Bush's father was president, we gave President George Bush scores. I think 67 new judges. We've been very, very good in the past. We're not going to change in spite of how we've been treated.
Tell us what some issues are that are going to be debated in the Senate and brought forward precisely because your party is now in the majority, issues that might have languished in committee if the Republicans were still in charge.
Well, let me say, first of all, I've been able to listen a little bit of the program to my friend Chuck Grassley, and Chuck is right. There are issues out there that we're going to have to work on together. We may prioritize them differently than the president would do. But, you know, I think it's fortunate for the country that we're in control of the Senate. But we're realists. The Republicans still control the House, and there's a Republican president. I think this demands bipartisanship. I mean, we don't want to be seen as the people who are always saying no. I think if there's something to be done on prescription drugs, on the Patient's Bill of Rights, on energy, of an energy program for this country, there's plenty of credit to go around. The president will get credit, the Republican House will get credit, and the bipartisan Senate will get credit. I think this is a formula that the president needs us, we need him. Therefore, why can't we accomplish something?
That's Senator Harry Reid, Democrat of Nevada. We're also joined by Senator Charles Grassley, Republican of Iowa. Mara Eliason, NPR's national political correspondent, is here from Washington. Our number, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Robert Dove used to be a parliamentarian of the Senate. Mr. Dove, so much talk here from both Senators Reid and Grassley about how well things can be managed, how they'll have to be able to cooperate.
Well, I would love to quote a good friend of mine. Her name is Abby Saffold, and she was the secretary for the majority when the Democrats were in control. And she told me once that there are so many people who feel if they can just find the right person, they will find out what the Senate is going to do that day. What they don't know is that no one knows what the Senate is going to do on any given day. So the idea that somehow there is a certainty and a plan. There is never a plan in the United States Senate. That's one of the reasons it's so interesting. I find it fascinating. And I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen now because of this change any more than they knew what the Senate was going to do before this change.
Bob, the only thing that I would say is that, you know, you certainly are an expert, been in the Senate for so many years and have been in every major battle in the last 20 years. But I would say this. On a day-to-day basis, I mean, there's no question that when I come to the floor tomorrow, I will have a pretty good idea of what we're going to do that day. We may not know how the day is going to end, but I know how the day is going to start. And when you're in the minority, you don't even know how the day is going to start.
Fair enough.
Robert Dove, things were pretty bare-knuckled there this year when the majority was so slender in favor of the Republicans, and one punch caught you and cost you your job. Was it as bad as you'd ever seen it?
No. The Senate, as I say, is a fascinating place. Real issues are at stake, and people really care about them. That's why I always have loved working for it. I frankly have never seen the Senate in as much disarray as it was in 1977 for the Natural Gas Act. Hmm. I mean, that in my period from 66 to the present, that was a time when it seemed like doors just flew off the hinges in terms of trying to get an organized body to work. But even that that came about. Senator Byrd at the end passed that bill. So the Senate goes through these periods, but it has a tendency to right itself. It has an equilibrium built in.
Robert Morrow, this is unsolicited. This is Harry Reid. But I really believe in my time in the Senate that we depend so much on the parliamentarian, and Bob Dove was that parliamentarian. And speaking for me personally, and not for any political party or any wing of any political party, Bob Dove always treated anything that I brought before him fairly, and I always felt impartially. And I'm sorry that he left in the way that he did, because I thought he was a great public servant.
Well, with that encomium, you're going to have to leave us now. Bob Dove, thank you very much for talking with us and being part of our program.
Thank you for having me.
And Senator Charles Grassley, we've heard from Harry Reid about what the difference is, being on the floor, having some idea of what he might do as opposed to what's done to him. Are you getting ready for life when you walk out every day and say, not what will I do, but what will they do to me?
No, not at all. In fact, the relationship that Senator Baucus and I have built up as members of the Senate Finance Committee, including a meeting we had yesterday, we intend to continue in the tradition of bipartisanship that the Senate Finance Committee has operated under for the most part for a long, long period of time, long time before I came to the United States Senate. And I see the difference in the way my work will be is I won't have the gavel, and I'm not going to be setting the agenda, but I do not expect to have any surprises pulled on me. I just know that it won't happen, and we're proceeding to work together to see if we can get a bipartisan approach to trade legislation, a bipartisan approach to prescription drugs for senior citizens, the same way we did the tax bill.
Now, but be partisan with us for a moment. As a member of the Republican Party, what's the message of Jeffords? Is it let's make sure that we make sure that Lincoln Chafee from Rhode Island feels comfortable in the Republican Party and the two moderate senators from Maine, or is it let's
the message that I would interpret from the actions of Senator Jeffords and the education that all Republicans ought to have is just treat your colleagues with respect. One time I was lobbying Senator Chafee on an amendment, and he said to me, why do I always have to get beat up on? And I was, I'm not a person to beat up on anybody, but it sent a signal to me that we ought to approach people in an intellectually honest way, respecting their rights as an individual senator, particularly within the Republican Party. I think we even have more of that tradition. And nobody should feel that they're beat up on. You know, in my years in the Senate, I was one of two Republicans to vote against the Persian Gulf War. I felt to some extent for 4 or 5 months after that maybe I was being beat up on. Nobody should have that feeling towards them. And that's the message that I think all Republicans ought to get from it. Treat every other Republican senator with respect and listen to their opinions and understand when they can't go along with us. On the other hand, every Republican senator, including Lincoln Chafee, including Jeffords and anybody else who feels like they're in a minority within our party, they should not resent being lobbied and, in an intellectually honest way, be encouraged that maybe their point of view could be changed a little bit, as we ought to listen to them, that we ought to change our point of view sometimes. In other words, approach people as friends and as equals.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Robert from Burlington, Vermont, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say that Vermont in 2001 isn't quite the same as Oregon was that other year that this other senator changed parties, and that we sent Jeffords to the Senate because we like him. We think he's a nice guy. We think he's moderate and has sound judgment, and it was in spite of the party that he had. And when he came back to Burlington at outside the Radisson Hotel, except for one idiot who was dressed up in colonial garb, talking about Benedict Arnold, Everybody was cheering, thank you, Jim, thank you, Jim, thank you, Jim, thank you, Jim. And he has absolute resentment from the clear majority of Vermonters.
You think Vermonters voted for him in spite of his party or with no regard for his party? It didn't matter either way.
I think in spite.
Well, this is Senator Grassley.
Yes, Senator Grassley.
I can't tell people in Vermont, and I don't know the situation in Vermont. My point was that Jim Jeffords felt enough allegiance to the Republican Party to take the campaign help, ask us to help raise funds for him. We did. Ask Republican senators to go up there and campaign for him and run under the auspices of the Republican Party.
That was before the stolen election of 2000.
But that wasn't one, in fairness.
Probably not, but I think it added to it.
I'm not going to argue Florida. Our Constitution decided who was going to be president. We're going to follow the Constitution.
Robert, if I could chime in here.
Yes, Senator Reid.
As everyone knows at this stage, I was involved in Jim Jeffords and his determining to be something other than a Republican. And I want everyone within the sound of my voice to understand that back here in Washington, there are things done every day as a matter of principle. With the beating that we take in the press, sometimes that doesn't come across very clearly. But I want everyone to know that Jim Jeffords did this as a matter of principle. Here is a person who has friends. Like he talked about his friendship with Chuck Grassley, John Warner, people who I know are wonderful human beings. But in spite of his longtime close relationship with them, as a matter of principle, whether you agree with it or not, but a matter of principle as seen by Jim Jeffords, he said that he could no longer be part of the Republican Party. And I think as a matter of principle, and a man of great courage walked away from something that would have been very easy. And also, those people that know Jim Jeffords, he is a man that does not seek publicity. He's shy, he's reserved, and he certainly didn't seek all this attention that he's gotten.
Is your message then, as part of the Senate Democratic leadership, look, you New Yorkers and New Englanders, Democrats who think that Senator Kennedy is, you know, represents the political center of your region, say, cool it, moderate, we can deal with the moderate Republicans if we reflect a more moderate Democratic image on the Hill.
Well, I think, you know, we Democrats are what we are. I was on a show last night with Lincoln Chafee.
Republican of Rhode Island.
Yes, CNN, I think it's called Inside Politics or something like that. I was stunned to hear Lincoln say, in response to a question by the interviewer, that he had never sat down and had a meeting in his year and a half in the Senate with Trent Lott, had never talked to him. I mean, in a meeting. They talked to him on the floor, of course, so had never sat down to talk to him. And I was really stunned to hear Lincoln say that. Now, our leader, Tom Daschle, has spent hours with every Democratic senator alone. I mean, spent timeless hours with these people. We have, whether it's right or wrong, we have a different philosophy about people that are within our conference. Everybody is equal. And I think what Chuck Grassley said, I think is a lesson to all people who are in government. You have to accept people for what they are, not what you want them to be.
Mara Liasson, we're hearing a lot about sort of small p politics here, which counts for a lot.
That's what I was just going to say. It's really interesting that both Senator Grassley and Senator Reid are talking about personal relations, kind of the style of leadership and how you deal one-on-one in the Senate with people who have different views than maybe the majority within the party. And certainly a lot was talked about how Jim Jeffords was treated. However, I think that there is, you know, also some larger issues here. In his statement in Burlington, Jim Jeffords said on one level he just had become too liberal for his party. In other words, he said on issue after issue, choice and education and the environment, et cetera, He was out of step with the Republican Party, and I'm wondering if the two senators can reflect on this. There have been some analysts who've said, there have been some analysts who've said in the wake of the Jeffords switch that maybe the Republican Party is becoming a kind of Southern and Western, you know, white guys' party, where liberal Republicans from the Northeast and New England just can't find a home there. I'm wondering, you know, what you guys think about that.
I've been active in Republican politics since 1958 when I was elected to the state legislature. This is Senator Chuck Grassley, and I want to say that there's been a lot of times when people of not of my conservative philosophy have run the Republican Party, and I felt the best thing to do if I wanted to change the Republican Party to be conservative, particularly fiscally conservative, then I ought to stay in the party and fight to change the party. And I think that would have been the best thing for Jim Jeffords to do. Was he had four generations of politics of his family being Republican.
But would he ever get to win one? Would he ever get to win a fight within the Republican Party?
Sure. Just like I've been able to bring the Republican Party around to my philosophy. From moderate to more conservative over the past 40 years by staying in the party and fighting, you don't change the Republican Party by leaving it.
Senator Jeffords seemed to be particularly his problem seemed to be with President Bush as much with the party more vaguely. Is that your understanding?
Well, but that's got to be a personal relationship thing and not just a matter of philosophy.
Robert,
yes, Senator Reed,
I would say here that it's quite clear that he had a problem with President Bush. You know, President Bush campaigned as one thing and has done other things, according to Senator Jeffords and a lot of us looking at this. I also think that, you know, it's not as if Jim Jeffords got and stood up in Vermont and gave these broad platitudes. He was very specific on issue after issue where the Republican Party had left him. He hadn't left the Republican Party.
Okay. Connection listeners, we want to hear from you after the break. The number 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined by Senators Harry Reid and Charles Grassley and NPR's Mara Liasson. We're talking about the shift in the Senate now that the Democrats are in the majority, albeit a majority of just one vote. This is The Connection from NPR. This is The Connection. I'm Robert Siegel. We're talking about the shift of power in the Senate. 1-800-423-8255. Michael is on the line.
Good morning, senators. I just wanted to, I went to the University of Vermont. I was a student there 15 years ago. Jeffords was around then. Poli-Sci student at that. And I just want to comment that it's one of the most honest political moves that I've seen in recent history. It's the closest thing the Republicans are going to see to Abraham Lincoln in action.
Your view of that, isn't it all tempered by the fact that there was a big prize on the other end for shifting, for getting a committee to get a committee chairmanship?
If it had been a Democrat becoming a Republican, I still would applaud the guy for being honest to himself. The fact that Vermonters rallied around him, I think, shows that Vermont is a very strong, and unified state as well.
Okay, Bruce.
He had the confidence to do that.
Michael, thank you very much. On to Mark. Mark is calling. What's your point? Mark, are you with us?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I have a comment and then a question for the senators. I guess I would, you know, just play on what Michael just said, is that it seems to be one of the most astute political moves in terms of a politician is trying to advance an agenda and a set of core beliefs, and Jeffords, by switching parties, has done more than he ever could have done to do that within the Republican Party, simply by shifting the power within the Senate, which then therefore accurately reflects the nature of American politics being so evenly divided, and this does that. So I would say that. My question then for the senators would be, over on the Democratic side, you've got probably someone analogous to the Jeffords situation with Senator Zell Miller from Georgia, who's on the conservative side of the Democratic Party. And how have, Senator Reid, you've been dealing with his situation, and maybe also touch on what Senator Shelby, when he moved parties, how that affected things.
Well, Senator Reid has actually left us, but Chuck Grassley is still with us, Senator Grassley of Iowa, on the Republican side. And Senator Grassley, at one point there was a joke going around that, you know, Zell Miller could have an aircraft carrier named after him if he wanted to join the Republican Party in the Senate.
Well, here again, Zell Miller is a person of conviction and principle, and he's not going to be bribed into coming into the Republican Party. And it would be an insult to approach him with that sort of thing.
But on the other hand,
suggesting that Senator Jeffords was bribed to go into the Democratic
Party? No, not at all. I've already said on this program that I'm Jim Jeffords is a friend of mine. I have respect for him. He'll still be a friend of mine. He'll still be voting with me a lot. And he is a person of principle.
But given the very good marks that Tom Daschle and Harry Reid got for talking with, wooing, courting, hand-holding with Senator Jeffords over the past few weeks, do you think that it's an important talent of the Republican leadership in the Senate now to be there, to talk with and be there just in case there might be any Democrats who would eye a seat on the other side of the aisle as preferable?
Well, I think personal relationships are always very, very good, and I'm a little oblivious to the lack of personal relationship between our leader and some other people in the party that's already been alluded to in this program, because I'm quite the opposite. You know, the first thing I did when I became chairman of the Senate Finance Committee is spend an hour in the office of the individual senators on my committee to find out what their agenda was for our committee, and that's why I think we were successful in being able to work a bipartisan tax bill. So consequently, that's how I operate, and that's how I'm going to continue to operate, even though I'm no longer chairman.
Mara Liasson, which do you think is the more likely prospect right now? A very closely divided but Democratic-led Senate makes compromises with the Republican House and the Republican-held White House, and we get some centrist, moderate legislation, or nothing happens for the next couple of years, and then they run against each other and really see who won in 2002?
Well, I think you're going to see a mixture of that. I mean, there's going to be a lot of amendments that are offered just for symbolic purposes. In other words, the Republicans will want to get Democrats to vote no on something they think is popular so they can put it in a 30-second ad and vice versa. But I think when you think about the kind of issues that are coming up, patients' Bill of Rights, Medicare prescription drugs, those are two things that both candidates ran on in the 2000 election. They had slightly different versions. In other words, the campaign was already kind of a campaign that was fought over a very narrow slice of the political spectrum right in the middle. So we're not talking about do you want a patient's bill of rights or not. You're talking about do you want one where you can sue for a lot of damages or sue for smaller damages, which the president proposes. So I think there is opportunity for compromise. President Bush gave an interview yesterday to the New York Times where he said that on the patient's bill of rights in particular, he could see compromise. It's in both parties' interests to get things done, on the one hand. It's also in both parties' interests to try to make the other side look like they've failed. Now, sometimes that's a hard thing to pull off. Medicare prescription drug coverage is something that was very popular during the campaign. President Bush has a plan where he only wants to offer it to low-income seniors, and the Democrats want to offer it to everyone. You'd think that there was some room for compromise. On the face of it, it's easy to predict gridlock. But I would just say that in 1996, right before the presidential election, which was a period of time that all historians say you can never get anything done, remarkably, the president signed and the Congress passed immigration reform, welfare reform, and health insurance reform. So, things could happen.
But every time a compromise might be reached on some of the current issues, like a prescription medicine benefit, say, there will be numbers of senators, both in the Republican and the Democratic side of the aisle, who will find whatever could pass as a compromise unacceptable to them.
Absolutely. And, Robert, the difference between this and the tax bill, and I think, you know, Senator Grassley is right. I mean, that was a bipartisan effort, and it was the centerpiece of President Bush's agenda. And he almost doesn't have to pass anything else to be considered a success, because that's going to have such a profound effect on the size of government. But everything else from here on in needs 60 votes. Only the tax bill, because it was a budget bill under the rules of the Senate, needed 51. So bipartisan compromise is absolutely required. You can't get anything passed unless you have 60. And, of course, there are going to be members of the Senate on either side who don't like the compromise. And not very many of them can stop it.
1-800-423-8255. Samuel is on the line from Beaufort, South Carolina. Or is it Beaufort, South Carolina?
Samuel. My name is Samuel Hannenberg. I'm a 1939 graduate of the Georgetown University Law School.
Good.
And I think the most profound significance in the change in power in the United States Senate has to do with appointments to the United States Supreme Court. Justice Rehnquist, Chief Justice Rehnquist, is now 75, probably will be ready to retire. Other justices will be ready to retire. And I think we'll have a significant change in the sense that the president will send to the Senate for confirmation justices who are in the mainstream, not of the type that Justice Scalia and Justice Clarence Thomas are. And then additionally, I think that the United States Senate, with control of the Senate Judiciary Committee, will get input from the American Bar Association, which I understand are the rules of the Republican majority in the Senate Judiciary Committee, has ousted or has eliminated any comments of the American Bar Association.
The ABA lost it.
To a Supreme Court.
Well, I'd like to ask Senator Grassley what you think, Senator.
Well,
President Bush is obliged to do for a Supreme Court nomination should one arise soon.
Well, obviously, somebody who is has judicial temperament, somebody who's going to interpret the Constitution, not make law, and somebody who is a scholar and things of that nature. In regard to the ABA, I think it's ludicrous to think that the ABA ought to have a voice in who's going to be judges any more than I'd sit back and wait for the American Farm Bureau Federation to give a judgment on who ought to be Secretary of Agriculture.
But practically speaking, is the message of the shift of the majority in the Senate to the White House, does it change the list of potential Supreme Court nominees? Do some people get bumped off now because they just would have no chance of getting through a judiciary committee chaired by Senator Leahy of Vermont?
The only way that could be the case is if he was going to send up somebody that was going to get confirmed 51-49, then obviously the change in the makeup of the Senate might make a difference. But if he's going to send up somebody he hopes gets 60 or 70 votes, I don't think it makes any difference whether it's 50-49 as it is now or whether it was 50-50 as it was for the past 5 months.
Okay, thanks to Samuel. And on to Jim from Newtonville, Massachusetts.
Yes, I was just calling to comment on Moore Eliason had said that Jeffords had said that his positions had become, or he had become, too liberal for the Republican Party. And in fact, I think he said quite the opposite, that the Republican Party had become too conservative. He had not changed, but the Republican Party had. And he blamed his decision squarely on President Bush.
Mara?
Yeah, he did say that, and most people who change parties say the party left me, I didn't leave the party. But when he listed those issues, choice and the environment, certainly President Bush didn't campaign pro-choice and then switch afterwards. I mean, one of the things that Republicans pointed out was, gee, President Bush hasn't changed his position since the campaign, and you supported him then. One of the other things that Senator Jeffords said that I thought was really, really interesting, he said that the change in control of the White House made his problems worse. In other words, when President Clinton was in office and all the Republicans had to do was block Clinton initiatives, they would give Jim Jeffords a pass, more or less. In other words, it wasn't such a it wasn't so crucial whether he voted with his party or with the president. And he did. He voted for the Clinton health care plan and he voted for a lot of other things that President Clinton wanted. But now that there was such a slim majority in the Senate and there was a Republican president, there was tremendous, almost unbearable, I guess, for Jim Jeffords, pressure on him to vote to advance the president's agenda.
But in fact, Mara, conservatives did say, to quote Casablanca, that Jim Jeffords
was shocked
to discover the Republican Party was a very conservative party.
Right. That's right. And I think that, you could say that for Jim Jeffords, this was something that was a very long time in coming. And he, clearly had been alienated from the party over a long period of time. Now, I think that it is fair to ask the question, why did Jim Jeffords do this at this time? And it's hard to escape the conclusion that if he wanted to have the biggest historical impact and substantive impact and that changing control would be, he didn't want to wait till, for instance, Strom Thurmond had died. He did it himself.
Yes, one more point, Jim.
I was just going to say that Bush clearly put out the image of being a moderate throughout the election. And then when he got elected, he was clearly far more conservative than he campaigned on. So I don't think it's fair to say that where has Jeffords been? Of course, you know, Bush is a far right-wing conservative. That's not how he campaigned.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Senator Grassley, well, do you think that he's governing differently than he ran?
No, just the opposite. Anybody that's cynical about government because politicians say one thing during a campaign and do something different while they're serving ought to be less cynical now because this president is doing exactly as president of the United States what he said during the campaign. And I didn't know Governor Bush, but he came to my office February 99, laid out his agenda because he wanted my support during the Republican caucus. I didn't decide to do it until several months later. I thought there was some pandering in his comments to me, but I found out later as he talked to the people of this country that he was saying exactly on television and in speeches what he told me in the privacy of my office, and he isn't doing anything different now as President of the United States than he told me in February of 99 that he was going to be doing as a candidate or be doing as president. So this president has well thought out his philosophy. He's well grounded, and he's doing in office what he said he's going to do. He is a person that is of strong convictions, and that's why he's going to be a very successful president.
One last question. Now that we've had this brief taste of what parliamentary government is like, you know, where one member changes parties and the government changes and the majority changes, since the loss actually took place not in a hospital room but on the floor of the U.S. Senate, is that a message to the Republicans that they ought to have different leaders in the Senate to try to prevent this thing from happening again or to pay for it happening in the first place?
No, it's a message to all Republicans that we've got to be sensitive of every one of the 49 members that we have and that their views are unique and different. They're representing their people, and they ought to be respected for their views.
Senator Grassley, thank you very much. NPR's Mara Liasson, thank you very much for talking with us today. And we also heard earlier in the hour from Nevada Senator Harry Reid, the number two Democrat in the United States Senate, and also from Robert Dove, who is Parliamentarian Emeritus of the United States Senate. They were all talking about the change in power as the Democrats assumed the majority because of the shift of James Jeffords from Republican to Independent and voting with the Democrats to organize the House, that is, the chamber. Connection listeners, you can continue the conversation on our website at theconnection.org. I'm Robert Siegel, and this is The Connection.